Welcome to the Herbal Womb Wisdom Podcast, where we explore the embodied practice of herbalism with the womb at the center for folks who are new to herbs or herbalists in the making. This is a place to become empowered to include herbs and natural therapies in your personal health and, most importantly, to reconnect the deep wisdom and healing capacity of your own body and the earth. I'm your host, clinical herbalist and integrative health educator, Kyalea Honeybee. Let's dive in. Hi, beautiful friends. Welcome. Welcome back if you're returning, and welcome, welcome if you're new. Spring is springing. It is springing. I mean, here in the Wabanaki lands of Maine, if you've been following me on Instagram, you might have seen that there is snow. We had a big storm this weekend, including both like 10 inches of snow and then an ice storm that encased all the trees and plants, and there's just ice everywhere. But I know that spring in many other places is entirely different. You may be seeing green and you may be seeing the flowers, and I can just imagine it. I can see the pollinators and the birds and the animals coming out and all the fertile energy, that fertile energy just vibrantly exploding like it does in the springtime. And so that is what I want to orient us to today when talking about springtime in our bodies, in the same way with springtime and summer, right? In our bodies, in the same way that we see it outside. There are the seeds of life are starting to germinate outside. And the seeds of our life inside, we hold in our ovaries as potential eggs. It's interesting. I woke up from a dream this morning, and in the dream, I heard the words that we are immensely powerful. Those of us with wombs are immensely powerful, that we are the weavers of the web of creation. Which is kind of, yeah, it's a powerful thing, right? It's almost like I could make that into a song, and then it would be this enjoyable sort of mantra-esque kind of chant that we could sing together and really feel our power. Those of us with wombs standing together, I could just imagine that happening. And it happened through the dream, and I'm just feeling that and really getting this sense of like, that is true. We are the weavers of the web of creation. All of us who are in these bodies with wombs, with ovaries, the female form, the lusciousness of the breasts or the chest, the lusciousness of our tissues or our sexual engorgement that can happen, and the phases that we go through, the cycles and the phases that we go through. So as we're moving through our menstrual cycle, moving from that place of like bleeding, right? So we're holding the thresholds there. We're holding that threshold of release and essentially of monthly death that occurs in our bodies, that sloughing off of the endometrium that becomes our menstrual blood, releasing there. So we embody that. We have the connection to that threshold place of release and death every single month. And then we build up in the follicular phase. In the proliferative phase, both of those are slightly different, but they're similar things. Proliferative refers to the uterus and the uterine lining starting to build up because of increased estrogen. And then the follicular phase being more related to the ovarian cycle. That's what we often talk about when we're talking about cyclical living, is that ovarian cycle where there's the follicular phase, which we consider to be our inner springtime when the potential eggs are starting to be developed until we get to that inner summer when ovulation happens and that brilliance of life, of potential of life, bursts from the ovary and heads into the uterine tubes or the fallopian tubes. So I'm not going to go into all of the details right now because I'm going to be sharing more about this in the episode itself. But I'll just share that in this springtime of the year, when we're looking at the wheel of the year outside and we're seeing all that blossoming, I wanted to bring in the concept and the idea of what is happening in our bodies at this time, and also what happens after ovulation. I think that's something that is often not talked about. We're kind of like, oh, this is the ovulation is a big event. And then, yeah, the egg just ends up falling through the uterus. So what we're going to actually talk about today is what it can look like even when conception happens, what it means actually when fertilization occurs and some of the myths around that and the misconceptions around that. And then also why I feel like we need to talk more about implantation than we do about fertilization or conception. And that's from the lens of both contraception and conception. So I'm going to try not to do too much really detailed physiology, but make it somewhat understandable just so we all have this sense. Because I think this is one of the things that I learned in midwifery school. And now I'm kind of going back to this OB-GYN little textbook that I have here to remember all of the different moments along the life cycle of the fertilized egg. But it's something that I learned in midwifery school, and I think most of us don't actually learn some of this basic physiology. So to really understand what's happening in what would be our luteal phase, even if we did end up with fertilization, with conception, what is happening in the luteal phase so that we get a sense of energetically understanding even what's possible in that time. And maybe a little bit of a re-evaluation of how we name what's happening in this time too. Okay, but before we dive into all of this, let's do the disclaimer that nothing that I share today is medical advice ever. I am an herbalist, I am an integrative health coach and educator, and it is all for your own information, education, and personal empowerment for you to feel into what feels true and right for you. Because your own body and your womb space know best. And if there are certain things you're especially interested in, do your own research, explore more on your own. And if you have any specific conditions or concerns that you want support with, seek out a practitioner to help you along the way. Okay, friends, well, it is time to explore the journey of the egg. So maybe let's just start at the very, very, very beginning, which is when you were in your mother or your parents' womb. It's hard to believe that, right? That way early on, when you were in your mother or your parents' womb, when you were an embryo, when you were developing as an embryo in those very earliest weeks, it's actually by the end of the third week of intrauterine life. So by the end of the third week of you being conceived, you are already starting to form the what are called germ cells, the primitive germ cells that are potential eggs in the body. And then by 5 months inside your intrauterine life, and intra being inside, uterine being in the uterus, right? So this is when you're in the womb space, you're floating around in the amniotic fluid as an embryo, and then eventually as a fetus. But in that embryological state, as things are just getting started, that is when the potential eggs, the germ cells, are starting to form for your potential eggs into your lifetime. And then by 5 months, that's when it peaks. That's when it peaks, the amount of potential eggs, the amount of germ cells in the fetal ovary, that's when you're a fetus, in your ovary, peaks at around 7 million. So that is 5 months into your time in the fluid world of your mother or your parents' womb space. It's pretty incredible to just feel into that. Feel into all the life force energy that is existing, that creative life force energy that is existing inside you as a developing fetus, inside your mother or your parents' belly, just knowing all of that is happening in there. Yeah. So anyway, I think that pregnancy and really understanding embryology and understanding the fetal development is fascinating. But I also think it's important for us to be like, okay, well, that's when it peaks, and then degeneration starts. So those potential egg cells totally naturally start to degenerate. We're in our mother or our parents' womb, and those potential egg cells are already starting to degenerate. That is just a way of life, right? We have this burst of life force, all these potential for new life, these potential eggs, these germ cells are being created. And then by the end of our gestation, when we're birthed into the world in whatever form that is, we may only have about 2 million of those primary oocytes. So 2 million from 7 million. And that's just in the few months from 5 months until birth time happens. And then by the time that you get to puberty, over time, more and more degeneration has happened, and that is completely normal and natural and healthy. So by the time you end up in puberty, in your ovary, you may have 300,000 to 400,000 of these potential eggs. So it's really interesting to think about this. Even when you think about it from an energetic perspective, I mean, it's interesting from a physical perspective too, and a physiological perspective, just to see and to think about this. But when we think about it from an energetic perspective, just all the potential life force that exists when we are in the womb space, so much is happening there. That energy of creation is extraordinary. And then in our childhood years, we're still carrying a lot of that potential life force energy. It is just booming, right? That springtime energy of all those seeds that have the potential to germinate, they're just sitting there. They're awaiting their time. And then puberty happens, and then degeneration begins. And then that continues. Now, one of the things that I wanted to mention, until we end up in perimenopause and then postmenopause, right? So over time, we have less and less of those potential eggs in our ovaries. However, one of the things that has been discovered just in the past few years, I feel like, because even when I was studying midwifery, the concept was that all of our potential eggs, every single one of our potential eggs, had been developed while we were in our mother's or our parents' womb space. Now, that is powerful in itself, and it's a powerful thing to even consider because, of course, a potential egg, right? So your potential eggs, your potential child was inside your mother or your parents' womb space. So it really connects us in that lineage of being connected to our grandmothers or being connected to our womb lineage, to the womb lineage that came before us, being held in that sort of energetic signature of our grandparent, and then carrying that on with us. Now, what has been discovered more recently, which is actually really interesting, is that there may be possibility to actually form new germ cells, new oocytes, new potential eggs in our ovaries throughout our lifetime. It's not common, but it is possible. So most likely, any of the eggs that we are going to ovulate and that will head out into the uterine tubes and down through the uterus most likely were formed in our mother or in our parent while we were in there, but not all. So that's something, just one of those things that I want to put out there. And I will link on the show notes page today, herbalwomb.com/episode 114, herbalwomb.com/episode 114. I will make sure to have some resources on this and a couple of the other myths that I'm going to bust throughout this episode so that you can get a little bit more articles or research to explore it. Okay, so now that we have gotten a sense of the lay of the land in our ovary, in our ovarian landscape, where these potential eggs are present. And I had a question actually in the embodied birth control class that I've been teaching in person. There was a question about how the ovary or how the potential eggs are chosen to start developing. And that is not something that I know about. I do not know. I feel like there's magic in there. Maybe there's some science. I'd be curious if anybody has any links to any research around if there's a certain quality or a certain, in quotes, reason that certain potential eggs are chosen to start developing. And then the one that becomes the fully developed mature egg that then is able to be ovulated, if there's a reason why one versus others are sort of the chosen one. But I also like to imagine that there's mystery there, that there is mystery, that life force and vitality and creation and the spark of creativity has more to do with something that is mysterious and unknowable. And even if we get a sense of it in the physiology, sometimes I think about how science is basically a philosophy. Like when we learn science, it is essentially mystical. We're learning this mystical art. I know some people are like, no, it's grounded and there's evidence, and that's true. but it's also learning to understand the unknowable. So starting to create language around some of these, what feel like mysterious processes that we're then able to understand in words and studies. But you know what? The studies don't always show exactly the same thing. That's one of the things that's so interesting when you actually start to look at science, is that it is always, always changing, constantly changing. There are new developments that are happening all of the time. Anatomical structures that are thought to be absolutely have no utility at all or function at all are discovered to have function. There is more to physiology, there is more to life than I think we can ever know. Like, just as much as heading out into space and discovering there is all of that happening inside our bodies, and probably at more and more of a microscopic level. So I'm going to let go of that philosophical kind of deep dive now, but just that concept that it's okay for us to not know. It's okay for mystery. And not only okay, it's also really inspiring and beautiful for us to embrace the mystery of life and the magic that's inherent there. So in some way, this potential egg is receiving all these hormones that are coming from the hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis, right? So the hypothalamus is then triggering the pituitary to be creating some of this follicle stimulating hormone, which travels through the bloodstream, through our blood to the ovaries, and then delivers essentially that hormone. That follicle stimulating hormone is triggering the development of these potential eggs in the ovaries. There's other things that are happening too, but that is happening. And then the one that is sort of the chosen one that develops and matures to the level of being ready to ovulate out of the ovary and then into the uterine tube. However, something that some folks don't know is that the ovary is not directly connected to the uterine tube. Uterine tube and fallopian tube are the same thing. They're synonyms. So I use the term uterine tube because that's what I learned in midwifery school, but a lot of people use the term fallopian tube. So the ovary and the uterine tube are not directly connected. There's something called the fimbriae, which are like finger-like projections that are almost like a sea creature that in the pelvic space, I think it's easy for us to be like, oh, our pelvis is just muscles and it's ligaments and we have the ovaries and we have the uterus and we have our sigmoid colon and we have our rectum and we have our bladder and like that's what's there. But the truth is that there's also fluid in there. It's a fluid environment. And so what is happening when the potential egg, that mature and developed oocyte, then bursts out of the ovary. There's other hormones that are involved in that process. I'm not going to talk about everything. LH has a spike and then this ovulation happens. The egg flies out. Truly, it really feels like it is bursting out of the ovary. I will post a link to a video. It's an animation video, but a video of this on the show notes page as well so that you can see this for yourself if you're actually really curious about it. I am clearly really passionate about this topic because it is fascinating to me. So it bursts out of the ovary into the fluid, and the fimbriae, these finger-like projections, are kind of undulating and sort of calling the egg in, and the egg then almost leaps. It almost leaps from the ovary into the uterine tube. And then once it's in the uterine tube, there are other finger-like projection cilia that are actually helping it to move along the uterine tube, moving towards the uterus. And along that way, there's some spasmodic action that's happening to help move, right? The contractions of the uterine tubes are happening as well to help move that oocyte along towards the uterus. So that is really what is occurring every single cycle in our bodies. It's kind of a miracle, really, to think about it. It's a mystery and it's a miracle and it's life force. And of course, some people do experience what's called middle schmerz, very odd name, probably named after somebody, that is a little bit of a pain or an aching that could feel crampy too in usually around the ovarian or the ovary, whatever ovary is ovulating in that cycle. That could be mid-cycle, kind of a little bit of cramping or pain that you feel. Sometimes it's sharp, sometimes it's more crampy, but it makes sense. When you think about this, what is happening, that there could be some kind of sensation and that some bodies might experience that sensation as pain. Usually that's pretty short lasting and is almost sometimes almost just a moment or a short period of time. Sometimes it's a little bit longer depending on the person. But think about what is happening. This oocyte, this egg is bursting from the ovary and heading into the uterine tube and there's movement happening. So it's something momentous. It's a big deal. And I don't think we really acknowledge what a big deal this is, but it is potential life force that is sitting there that is ready possibly for fertilization, for conception, that has developed to this level to bring life into the world potentially, that's then traveling through our uterine tubes and then through our uterus. If we don't conceive, we'll just travel through the uterus and then out the cervix and then down the vagina, and you may not even notice it. You probably won't notice it. It's tiny. So I think that's something to just sit with for a moment, to feel that, to feel the momentousness of the oocyte developing and then bursting and then traveling, and that this happens every single month in our bodies, this life force, this potential. And these potential eggs, many of them, most of them, almost all of them, were formed while we were very tiny embryos, and then fetuses inside our mother's or our parents' womb space. I know, I'm a bit passionate about this topic. I think physiology for me is something that I nerd out about a lot and I love deeply. The more that I learn physiology, the more enamored by and in awe of our bodies I am. So I'm going to just apologize for any of the excess passion that you're feeling that might just kind of be like, oh my gosh, is this really so great? But let me just tell you, in my mind, in my heart, it is. And I hope that you're feeling a little bit of that too. So it's special stuff. I am excited now to share about what can happen. Now, if there is the potential, right? If sperm is around, if this is something in our fertile window, I will link to the episode where you can determine what your fertile window is and why it matters. I just did that a couple of months ago. I'll link to that so you can listen to that if you're not familiar with your fertile window. But in that fertile window, so right, this is before ovulation, your cervix will start to, there's a lot going on here. There's estrogen is rising, and your cervix is starting to produce copious amounts, ideally copious amounts of fluid. And that fluid changes in texture, it changes in what it feels like. But typically, because your estrogen is high, usually at a peak right before ovulation. There's a lot going on here that's all playing together, but usually that's happening. And so you're going to have the most fertile cervical mucus typically right before and during ovulation. And of course, that is evolutionarily created for the most likelihood of potential conception. Or is it? That's an interesting question. So when we're thinking about sperm, when we're thinking about having potentially fertilizing sex, which obviously is something that you need to be aware of, that the potential for pregnancy exists only in the fertile window. And you're only potentially fertile for this 6-day, maybe expand that to 7-day period in your entire menstrual cycle every month. And so if that's news to you, I'll definitely link to more resources for you. Start with the fertile window one, and I'll link to more resources for you to learn more about how to determine when you are fertile. But during this time, if you are having potentially fertilizing sex, unprotected, potentially fertilizing sex, penis and vagina type of sex in your fertile window, and then ejaculation happens inside you in that time, then what happens? Does that mean that automatically, if that happens, you're just going to have a fertilization and then get pregnant? The answer to that is no. And I think that that is a misconception and a confusion for a lot of people sometimes. And so let's talk about why not. First of all, something that's really interesting and that I've learned about more recently is that our cervical fluid is actually filtering out any non-viable sperm. So even if you have potentially fertilizing sex in your fertile window, if those sperm are not suited to essentially life, right, viability, then they will likely be filtered out. They won't be able to travel up through the cervical mucus, through that cervical fluid. So that in itself is pretty neat. I will link to an article on that because I think it's pretty cool. The other thing is that when you have that egg whitey cervical fluid, of course, that's also a perfect, almost super highway for these sperm to head into the uterus, for the ones that are viable to head in, right? So that is one of the reasons that we want to really pay attention when we're having different changes to our cervical mucus and understand how fertile we are. That's one of the hints, one of the clues. It is not the only thing, and it is, you cannot base your fertile window only on cervical mucus. You have to include your temperature, and you have to always consider yourself potentially fertile whenever you see anything that looks like fertile mucus. It doesn't have to be just the egg whitey part. So once those sperm, let's say, once you have that potentially fertilizing sex, and the sperm that are not filtered out end up either in the cervix, and it's not ovulation yet, so they actually hang out in the cervical crypts, which are spaces where they have the nutrients they need to spend some time. They can be there for up to 5 days until ovulation happens. So then once ovulation does happen, what happens? So these sperm, whether they've been sitting around or they're newly in there, they'll head up through the uterus and then towards the uterine tubes. And in the uterine tubes, they will potentially encounter, I'm sure some of them don't. A lot of them will probably slough off along the way and not make it there. But the ones that do end up encountering the egg, the oocyte. I learned when I was young, I think I might have been 10 or less, I remember seeing an image and seeing this idea that the sperm, it was from that, I think it was that movie, Look Who's Talking. I'm dating myself 1,000,000%. So if you are of my age or older, you will remember that movie. And if you are much younger, you're going to be like, what are you talking about? So Look Who's Talking, I believe, was the movie. And there was this scene, it was way in the beginning, I think, where it was just this visual image of these sperm racing and then encountering the egg. And the first one there just like digs itself into the egg. So that was the image that I had forever of how this worked. The idea that, oh, it's the first sperm that gets there that will just inevitably fertilize this egg. Turns out that's not the case. And I will link to an article in the show notes that you can learn about this. But it's actually the egg is, in some ways, choosing what sperm it allows in. It is often not the first sperm that makes it there. So the egg is actually secreting chemicals and it is assessing chemically what these sperm's makeup are. And then it chooses one of them. It allows one of them in. And another thing that I remember learning, I learned from Wapio, I will say I did a really interesting quantum midwifery retreat, week-long experience with Wapio, probably must have been like 2013, so a little over 10 years ago. Beautiful midwifery teacher, doula teacher, and now is doing a lot within the sort of wise woman, wise person realm and the elder years. So Wapio shared, and this was really, it's just stuck with me, is the difference between the size of the egg and the size of the sperm. So eggs are huge comparatively. I mean, we're talking like the size of a huge conifer, like a huge tree compared to us as humans, like really, really, really big. And then these sperm are tiny. And so the egg is actually, if you think about it, a very powerful entity in the space. And then has the capacity to choose chemically, right? These chemicals that are essentially assessing the environment around is choosing one of these tiny little sperm to merge with. So there's something really beautiful in that in a lot of ways. And I'll just leave it there. I don't want to speak too much to what I see and feel in that, but I think it's really powerful. I think that our potential eggs, our oocytes, are incredible forces of creation and also have a level, maybe it's not conscious, I don't know if we could call that conscious, but a level of choice in this matter. And our eggs will actually reject certain sperm, and sometimes it relates to an entire person. It can be that our eggs will actually just reject someone's sperm over and over again. So, and will really accept another person's. So there's really a lot of mystery in this, a lot to maybe explore more of from a philosophical perspective and also from a scientific perspective. I'm not sure if there have been a lot of studies on like the why or the reasoning behind that. But I find it really interesting. So it's something to consider, of course, in fertility cases too, right? And infertility and the journey of fertility experience. And it's something that is pretty powerful to embody, to acknowledge in ourselves that this is happening. So let's say then that this oocyte does receive. This is a very receptive, it's a choice. So there's an activity there, but there's also a receiving and emerging. So it does receive this sperm. What happens then? So this is like a cell, right? These are cells. This is not some embryo that's already created. This is a now two-cellular structure. There's more intricacy to this process, but I'm going to try to keep it really simple just to express in this space on the podcast. But at this point, it's essentially a two-cellular structure that's existing. This is called a zygote. And as that continues to sort of develop, it continues to replicate. These cells continue to replicate. And so from two cells, it goes to four cells. And from four cells, it goes to eight cells. And from eight cells, it goes to 16 cells. When you're at that 16-cell structure, that is considered to be a marula. The marula is truly just 16 cells that are all together. This is just like if you were to see it come out in your blood, you wouldn't see it. It might look like a tiny, tiny little clot, but you really wouldn't see it. It's eight cells. This is tiny. And it is not yet what I would consider to be an embryo. Yes, maybe you could argue that embryology starts at the moment of conception. But in my mind, when we're naming this, probably better to name this as a 16-cell structure that exists. It's just like a whole bunch of cells bopping around together inside, you know, they're inside a fluid sac essentially. And by this time, they may still be in the uterine tubes heading towards the uterus. They may not have even made it to kind of the cavity of the uterus yet. And they're just kind of rolling along as a continually dividing group of cells. Really, a group of cells is a good way to put this in the marula. And then what happens is there starts to be this tiny amount of like a fluid area and then the cells kind of migrating towards each other, like together, still in what feels like a group of cells that are hanging out together. And that's called an early blastocyst. And that, the blastocyst, is what begins to potentially implant if the uterine lining is in a state that is conducive to implantation. Then this group of cells that has a little bit of fluid in it, called the blastocyst, will begin to implant into the uterine lining. And you'll start to see then there's the amniotic cavity. But before the implantation happens, this is truly a group of cells. So that's going to be after, likely, depending on how long your luteal phase typically is. Many luteal phases normally are within 11 and 17 days. That's a very normal luteal phase length. 17 is a little long, 10 is a little short, but 11 to 17 is very typical. So really, by the time you have, if you're tracking your cycle, you will 100% know that you had ovulated, that you may have had potentially fertilizing sex in your fertile window, and that you are not bleeding at a time that you expect to be bleeding. If that's you and you are interested in conception, then congratulations, you likely have a potential pregnancy inside you. Is that going to last? There's no way to really know that. Implantation needs to happen, and a lot of lovely, beautiful developments that happen in those first weeks. It's pretty incredible how much does happen, including, like I was saying before, the development of those germ cells of potential eggs for the future, even in that first month and a half will start to happen. So that's pretty huge. But all of that said, when we think about it, so that's more from a conception lens. If we're thinking about it from a contraception lens, then really considering that there's this whole period of time that there could be a fertilized egg, an actual like potential embryo that is beginning to have its multicellular structure, essentially, that is hanging out and bopping around. I don't know if they're bopping. They're probably more like fluidly moving. But in my mind, they're bopping around on the uterine tubes to get to the uterus. I'm sure that there's some element of them just kind of moving more fluidly. But before they implant, there's a lot of opportunity, if contraception is important to you, there's a lot of opportunity to encourage the release of that fertilized egg, the release of that ball of cells, that sack of cells that are hanging out together. When they're still in that form, it is the easiest to be able to say, okay, I would like for this not to implant. Okay, I would like for this not to happen. I would like to try to decrease my progesterone. I would like to try to reduce the chances of implantation. I would like to potentially encourage my uterine lining to slough off and to do what it knows how to do, which is that threshold that I pass through every single month, menstruation. That is the time when you can really work towards that if contraception is important to you. And so I wanted to kind of bring that to light because I think that sometimes we think, oh, this is something that happens quickly and all of a sudden we're just pregnant and that embryo is inside us. But if we change our perception and we understand the physiology of what's happening, then we see what our choices are, especially from the contraception lens. And we see what our choices are from the conception lens. If we're wanted to conceive, then we can really encourage an optimal uterine environment. We can encourage nourishment. We can encourage good blood flow. We can encourage we can eat really amazing food. We can really support ourselves and really work with visualization and connection and all of this, if that's important to you, to really encourage and support the potential of pregnancy. But if you're looking at it from a contraception lens, to understand that the luteal phase, if there was potentially fertilizing sex, is the best time to really start to work on encouraging, whether that's with herbs, whether that's with bodywork, whether that's with steaming, whatever that is, to really start to encourage your natural menstrual flow to happen. And then, of course, if this fertilized egg, if this group of cells ends up not implanting, that could happen. This is something that you may have experienced multiple times, who knows, in your life. It's unclear how often this happens. Actually, it's thought to happen a lot more than we know. Then you won't notice. You'll just bleed. You'll be like, oh, maybe I was a couple days late, or maybe I wasn't even late and I just bled. That can happen, and you won't know that conception occurred. So this is all to share the journey of the egg. So the journey of the egg from that time of germ cells, when we are very, 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 very tiny embryos, barely even differentiating after being implanted. That's when they start to grow, these potential eggs in our bodies, inside our mother or our parent. And then all the way through our lifetime to potentially ovulating, and that journey from the ovary into the uterine tube. and then all the way down the uterine tube and then through the uterus and then out our vaginas. So thinking through when this is happening is also important, when the viability is there and when it's happening. So that just comes out. You don't even notice it. You're not going to notice it. Now, really understanding, oh, and then if fertilization happens, if there's that potentially fertilizing sex and the magic and miracle of fertilization and conception actually happens, there's still the whole process of that continued development of that multicellular structure, which a lot of times probably doesn't end up implanting. And sometimes it does, but there's a lot of pathway to get from multicellular structure to implantation. So feeling that and seeing that and knowing this process inside your body that is kind of an epic journey that occurs on its own every single month. Well, I'm offering that story to you today. So I'm curious to hear how that lands for you. If there's anything that was new to you that felt inspiring or that you're shocked by or that you're going to carry forward and want to share with other people. I'm so curious if there's anything in this for you or if it just helps you to feel more connected to your cycles, to the seasons and cycles of your body. There's so much more happening inside us than we can ever know. And this particular monthly cycle journey is something that I think is worthy of at least hearing once, if not more than once, and really envisioning and embodying inside ourselves. So thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want those show notes, you can get them at herbalwomb.com/episode 114. And I will encourage you, if you're not already tracking your cycle from the fertility awareness lens, to grab my free guide on tracking your cycle naturally, because that can get you started and you can start to understand when your fertile window is, how to track that, and really get a sense of what's happening inside your own cycle and your own body so that you can tune in a little more to this ovulation time if you want to. So you can find that at herbalwomb.com/track-your-cycle, herbalwomb.com/track-your-cycle. And otherwise, my beautiful friends, I hope that you are enjoying this springtime. I hope that there are seeds sprouting, whether that is inside your greenhouse or on your windowsill or outside, that you're feeling that sense of possibility in yourself and that you can tune in to that sense of possibility inside your ovaries just as much as you can outside your window. Thanks for being here. I look forward to being with you again next week. Until then, live well, connect deeply, and have a beautiful day.